Welcome, everybody, to a special review episode of the
Geek
Buddy.
Where we're reviewing the first episode of season two of the
Mando
Glorious.
Great stuff. Excited to be back doing this with you two, and especially for you all who are watching or listening to us here on the Geek Buddies. A lot of fun. This is where we're going to put the reviews of The Mandalorian on the Outlaw Nation channel. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about this one. All right, we're back. Season two debuted last night as we're recording this at midnight on Disney Plus. It's called The Marshal, considered episode 9. And so much happens here. We go back to Tatooine. Quick synopsis. The Mandalorian goes to Tatooine in order to find another Mandalorian. Instead, he finds a marshal that has Boba Fett's armor. They have to fight a Krayt dragon with Tusken Raiders and the citizens of Mos Pelgo. After defeating the dragon, Din, that is the Mandalorian, is given Boba Fett's armor by Cobb Vanth as part of their deal, and Boba Fett is revealed to still possibly be alive. We're going to get into all of that, and this is going to be spoiler heavy.
And that's it, guys. That's the review. We're done.
That's the review.
Good episode. Good episode.
Fantastic.
Bye.
Number one.
See you next week.
So just letting you all know, we're going to spoil the episode for sure on this review. So just letting you know before we start, spoilers. Anyway, let's get into it. Gentlemen, first, your overall feelings about this episode and the way this introduced us back into the world of Mandalorian in season two.
Fantastic. I was a little nervous after they met John Leguizamo's character, the Cyclops guy.
Yeah.
I was a little nervous.
Abyssian.
Is that sorry? Apologies.
I think that's right.
Well, is Gore Koresh is his name? But yes,
Gore Koresh. But he is an Abyssian. I think
so too. Yep.
Regardless, when they got to Tatooine and we saw Amy Sedaris, I was like, oh. Yeah. This is my least favorite character from my least favorite episode of the first season. Luckily, she did not grate on me as much this time. Yeah. I hate that wig so much. But everything else about the show I thought was just dynamite. The whole rolling into the dusty town, how everyone's kind of staring at this outsider. Yeah. So fantastic. And you can just tell that already the show was probably expensive. They have leveled up huge. I mean, just the scale of this episode, the action, everything was dynamite. I mean, I would venture to say that this is the best episode of the series thus far.
Wow. Mike, what's your feelings about this episode?
I don't know about that. I think the season finale, I think chapter 8 is probably my favorite episode still, just because so much character stuff happens. But I was super thrilled about this episode. I was so happy. I think the best thing I can say about Mandalorian is that it makes me feel the way Star Wars should make you feel. Like, it makes me feel like I'm a kid all over again. I think, in a Venn diagram where sci-fi, fantasy, and Western meets, that's where Star Wars' sweet spot is. And I do think this episode kind of nailed that to a T. So it was great. Tons to talk about. I will say that when Amy Sedaris showed up, all I could think of was, oh, Shannon is so mad right now. But I find her and her pit droids absolutely delightful. So I was happy to see her again.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. Pelimoto, that's her name. I like seeing her whenever she shows up. It's the Bill Burr one that I can't handle, but Amy Sedaris, I didn't mind. This was an interesting episode in the fact that we didn't pick up right where we left off with this idea of, you know, Moff Gideon and the black lightsaber. There was none of that addressed necessarily or talked about. We're just going, okay, he's got to go return Yoda, baby Yoda, or the child back to his kind. What adventures is he going to go on? And this was just like one of those episodes in the middle of the season, last season, kind of for lack of a better term, monster of the week episode. But, and there were shades of other, you know, other episodes from the first season that were kind of weaved into here. But we also got some Lawrence of Arabia vibes. We've got some High Plains Drifter vibes. We got more time with the Tusken Raiders, which I was excited about. We did go back to Tatooine. We get Cobb Vanth. And we had talked about Cobb Vanth on a previous episode of the Geek Buddies, and shout out to Slash Film and everybody there who kind of broke the story about Timothy Oliphant possibly being Cobb Vanth and the history of Cobb Vanth in the books and in the lore of Star Wars. A very recent history, for sure, Mike, you know this, with the Aftermath trilogy of books. He is part of that. So we got his backstory a little bit, and then we got the two gunslingers coming together, bringing in the two warring factions to come together to go against the ultimate evil, or what they term to be the ultimate evil, a Krayt Dragon, which has connections with the Tusken Raiders, because apparently killing a Krayt Dragon is supposedly a rite of passage for Tusken Raiders as they come into being male or adult Tusken Raiders. So
that's look, part in episode of four. In episode four, we watched C-3PO and R2-D2 walk right past the skeleton of a Krayt Dragon. Yeah, so it has been in Star Wars from the beginning. We've just never quite seen it so big and horrifying and huge and acid-spitting. But, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing that I think Favreau and Filoni do so well, is they're able to look back into the films that have preceded this series, and they're able to grab just a morsel, like the smallest thing that we saw. We saw the skeleton in the background as the droids are walking down. Like, we're making an episode out of that. Like, let's talk about this. Let's make a whole adventure out of this.
Yeah. No, and I think Mandalorian has done this from the beginning, and I think you're absolutely right, where Star Wars, what made Star Wars amazing when it came out is it was sci-fi, but it felt like a very lived-in universe. It felt like there was a history there. And Shannon's absolutely right. They take the history and they pull up little pieces and they're like, oh, well, let's build a thing out of this. Let's build an episode around this. Let's build a character around this. And I think that's super, super cool. I think that, and I do think that this definitely still feels like Mandalorian season one in that it was an adventure of the week. You know, there's a beginning, middle, and end. He shows up on Tatooine. He wants to get that armor. He has to do a thing. They do the thing. He gets the armor. He leaves. But as opposed to season one, where he was sort of aimlessly flying around from week to week and we weren't quite sure what was happening, he does have more of a mission now. Like, we know he is looking for Mandalorians. So there's a little bit more of a drive. And of course, with the Temuera Morrison moment at the end revealing Boba Fett, we are sort of doing a little bit more connecting. That was Boba Fett. That's Boba Fett.
I don't know how you guys can say that so confidently. Boba Fett's not supposed to age. It's said in the lexicon that Boba Fett was made as a clone to be a non-aging clone.
No, to age at a normal rate.
Nope. Don't agree with you guys, but go ahead. Keep going.
I mean, you can agree or disagree. The correct thing that Jango Fett wanted, because the Kaminoans, they rapidly aged clones so that they could be ready to fight in the Clone Wars. Right. And all that Jango Fett wanted was a clone that would be his son that would age at a normal rate. So
an unaltered clone, I believe.
Hold on.
Here it is.
In Attack of the Clones, the Kaminoan Prime Minister Lama Su tells Obi-Wan that Boba was a pure genetic replication with no tampering with the structure to make it more docile and no growth acceleration.
Yeah, right. So he's going to age.
So he's going to age normally. He's not going to accelerate.
That's your interpretation of to me, growth acceleration implies the aging. So
that's not what it is.
That's not what it is. But
no,
it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It's fine that you can have your belief on something, but all other Star Wars fans are on board with the fact that clones accelerate their age.
Right.
And Jango Fett wanted a clone. That was not tampered with and would not accelerate. Accelerate and age are two different things. Accelerate means go faster.
Acceleration. Right.
Yeah, so he would not age faster, thus the acceleration word.
Yeah, all right. But then that would put him at 41 years old, if we say that, depending on the timeline of Boba Fett. And Temuera Morrison is 59.
And he got digested by a sarlacc.
Well, a fictional universe can't actually de-age somebody in real life, so you're gonna have people playing people at different ages. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't think the jury's in yet that he's absolutely Boba Fett, but we'll see.
I will let this go. It's a good debate to have.
Not everyone is believing this is Boba Fett, by the way, on these Star Wars sites.
By your logic, if he is an unaging clone, then why would he age from Attack of the Clones to Empire Strikes Back to become an adult?
I'm saying I don't know what the situation is with him in terms of, is he going to hit a point and then that's it? He grows no more than that. He ages no more than that once he achieves full adulthood. I don't know.
Well, you do know because they say it in Attack of the Clones. But moving on, right. I do
think
that
this is...
You
got the last word, though. You got the last word. Go ahead. Way to go. Go ahead.
I do think, assuming he is Boba Fett, I am pretty interested to see what happens. Like how, I guess he would have been, I mean, like, I timeline wise, not sure how long he's been out of the Sarlacc pit, not sure what happened. I mean, he's got this scar on his face, so one would assume, however he made it out of the Sarlacc pit, he was pretty weak, which is why the Jawas got his armor. Right. Why has he not tried to get his armor back until now? Yeah. Presumably, given the clanking of the boots, he is the same. This is the same character that we saw at the end of the last Tatooine episode in season one.
Episode five,
What has he been doing? What, you know, where are we going with this? And also remember, and this is a kind of an interesting little tidbit, like Boba Fett hates Jedi. I mean, Jedi killed his dad. Right. In Clone Wars, the animated series, he pretty much was all about let's kill Jedi. And then he died. After fighting a Jedi on Santa's sail barge, or Santa, Jabba's sail barge. If he does team up, if he does show up, meet up with Mando, what's going to happen once he finds out there's a Force-sensitive kid there, like, is he going to want to kill Baby Yoda? Like, what's going to happen? So I think, like, he is kind of a fun wild card to play, and it's nice to see Boba Fett back in the universe, assuming this is actually him.
Right, and something to support both you guys' arguments is that Star Wars filed, as of a couple of days ago, more trademarks for Boba Fett. They re-upped their filing for Boba Fett for fiction books, science books, fantasy, blank journals, binders, clipboards, posters, notebooks, trading cards. So they re-up that in anticipation, possibly, of this being Boba Fett. And it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that it is Boba Fett, because in other not considered canon writings, Boba Fett has been around or escaped the Sarlacc pit in a number of ways. You know, he made the Sarlacc compact on his jetpack, and that exploded him out of the Sarlacc pit. He even says that in one of the comic book series, I think in the early 90s, that when he confronts Solo again, he says the Sarlacc found him undigestible or not digestible. And so there's possibilities that it could be Boba Fett. I'm not saying you guys are right or wrong. I'm just saying I'm keeping my jury out for now until we know for sure. Because it could be Commander Rex. It could be Rex, Commander Cody. It could be any number of the clones. It doesn't have to be Boba Fett. So.
It could be. Right. I doubt that it is, but it could be.
Sure.
Like nobody would love to see Rex in live action more than I would, but I'm pretty sure we are looking at a Boba here.
Okay.
If it walks like a Boba, it talks like a Boba. It's a Boba.
It's a clone, though. I don't know.
Well, they're all clones.
That's what I'm saying. So it could be anybody. It could be anybody.
But one is an unaltered clone.
Sure, if you say so.
Well, I also really did love, I mean, just kind of getting to the meat of the episode, I really did love just the straight up Western vibes of the whole thing. I loved, as Shannon said, Mando kind of coming into the town on the speeder bike, really slow, all the townsfolk kind of looking at him. I loved that it was just this tiny little outpost town. I mean, you think of Mos Eisley or Mos Espa as kind of small, but they seem like giant cities compared to this little outpost. And I mean, I loved him going, he walks into the saloon, Timothy Oliphant, Mr. Deadwood himself comes in. So like the whole thing was just built to be even more of a Western than what we usually get in Star Wars. Yeah. And I think they did it great. Even getting into everything, you know, the townsfolk, the settlers and the indigenous peoples having to work together at the end. Like, I mean, everything about this was just really, really fun spaghetti Western stuff that is like the meat and potatoes of Star Wars. Yeah. And so I thought that was super fun. And then kind of just the constant sort of nods to every other piece of stuff. Like, I love that Cobb Vanth rides a engine of a pod racer instead of a speed racer.
Could be
Anakin. I mean, I don't think it is. I think already people who are way more geeky than I am have already compared the engine to all the engines from episode one. And they're like, don't think that one matches any. Okay. And that was a long time ago. But I do think it's just awesome, you know, kind of the nod to pod racing.
Yeah.
And so I think that was all great. The crate dragon being this sort of smog meets alien meets the graboids from Tremors, like the whole thing was awesome. I was just super enthralled by the entire episode.
I've got a crazy theory about this episode, which I'll tell at the end of the show. But yeah, go ahead, Shannon. What were you going to say next?
I mean, I loved Oliphant. I mean, I'm a big Timothy Oliphant fan, and that he was kind of channeling his Raylan Givens, Seth Bullock characters from Justified and Deadwood. And he was not the only former Deadwood cast member in this episode. The guy who plays the bartender is a guy named W. Earl Brown, who played Dan in Deadwood, who was Swear Engine's kind of right-hand man. And he was also, he was in the first movie that I was ever in. I had a fight scene with that guy.
Nice.
Hey,
he's also Mr. Frank and Beans from Something About Mary. So from that's the same actor. So he's certainly
Mary's brother.
Boy range. Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed the Western / samurai vibes of this one as well. Really enjoyed. Yeah, as you said, coming into the town, just like you would see Yojimbo come into the town in the Kurosawa samurai film, same way Gunslinger coming into town. I like that the dress is still like the 70s dress from that Star Wars stuff. That's all still there in that town because, of course, they're an outpost. They're in essence a suburb of the city way out. So, I mean, they're not going to necessarily be all in touch with what's happening. But I really enjoyed the story of Cobb Vanth and seeing, you know, the second Death Star blew up and then seeing what happened, something called the Mining Collective coming in and taking over and enslaving the town, then them having to fight back, you know. And the original Cobb Vanth story, it's a little more complicated than that, but you get the basic bones of this story that he's a kind of hero who saved the town. And it's called The Marshal, which is great. But him giving up the armor is fascinating to me. And I just have a feeling that you don't cast Timothy Oliphant for one episode. So in some way, I feel like he's going to come back like Cara Dune did in season one. So we're going to see more of that. And them teaming up together was a great combo.
Oh, my God.
And I've got to find a Tusken Raider glossary or dictionary to learn how to speak that language, because that language was a lot of grunts and twists and hand signals. And I enjoyed all of that, too.
I did not know this, but I found this fascinating. And I kind of went back and listened to it. And it is... Obi-Wan Kenobi in episode 4 scares the Tusken Raiders away by making the noise of a crate dragon. Yep. And the noise that the crate dragon makes, if you listen to it, it's just a louder, more, but you're like, oh yeah, that matches up. Again, it's one of those Filoni sort of let's take a thing over here and be like, yeah, we'll make that this thing, which I thought was really great. One thing that you were talking about, Johnny, and I thought this was great, and I'm excited that season 2 is doing this, is we know when Mandalorian takes place, and we knew it was 5 years after Return of the Jedi, but like with Cobb Vanth sort of talking his backstory, we're starting to fill in some of those gaps about the things that happened from the moment the second Death Star exploded to what happened. And I loved what he said about, power doesn't love a vacuum. Like, you know, something's going to step in to take the place. And that's kind of what happened. So I thought filling in those gaps for us. And I feel like, you know, this season is going to be filling in a lot of gaps about, you know, Moff Gideon kind of mentions the Siege of Mandalore, the Night of 1,000 Tears or something. Right. And so I think as Mando does find more Mandalorians, including hopefully Bo-Katan and Sabine Wren, we're going to get the history of Mandalore filled in a little bit too and find out what happened on that siege and why the Mandalorians kind of got spread far and wide. So I think that we're going to get a lot of answers this season that people have been really wondering about.
Well, and you figure with the Empire, you know, the Empire was kind of out in the Outer Rim. We saw that in A New Hope. But, you know, they talk about in the prequels how, you know, the Republic doesn't really make it out that far. So now that the Empire is gone and the New Republic is having to build up, the last places they're probably going to get are going to be planets like Tatooine and maybe Navarro. And that's why the Empire still had a little bit of a presence there. That's such smart filling in the blank storytelling, as you said, Mike.
Yeah, I like that we got some good action in this thing. Both of them using their jetpacks was awesome and fun. I like the Tusken Raiders coming to. I like this idea once again. Star Wars always presents this idea of people coming together to fight a bigger evil, right? This, even though it's very clear from the Marshal that the Tusken Raiders have attacked that town more than once and they have lived up to their names as raiders, they still have to work together with them to defeat this overall evil. And it's interesting to see how much the Mandalorian has progressed as a fighter. You know, remember those creatures in the first episode were tearing him to pieces, and he adjusted his armor. He adjusted his. He seems to have grown as a fighter himself. He slid through that acid, blew that thing up from the middle, and slid on out there, looking great.
Jetpack makes a big difference.
It does, right? And also, the idea that he's cool with the droids now. That's also kind of a progression of the character of that's, the Mandalorian as well.
I really did like that whole, like, based on what happened with IG-11 at the end of the first season, that they really hit that right away in a nice, subtle way with the pit droids. I definitely agree. And along the Tusken Raider line, I mean, I was thinking about this as I watched it. We spent more time with Tusken Raiders in this episode than I think we have in the entirety of Star Wars.
Yes,
I mean,
which I enjoyed.
They're sort of, in episode four, they're sort of used as a threat that's going to attack Luke. And now, after watching this episode, I feel even worse for the Tusken Raiders in Attack of the Clones that Anakin killed. Granted, they were holding his mom as a slave, but like...
I mean, for a month.
So I'm not saying it wasn't warranted. But yeah, I mean, I really like the way that they are sort of nuancing the Tusken Raiders. Because taking even something like those characters and adding some dimension, adding some culture, adding a little... Like, all the stuff with them kind of sharing the cup... And Cobb like not wanting to drink it, and them getting in a fight, and Mando sort of playing the negotiator between them. Like all of that was just like those were just great character moments, culture moments, like things that are now. And what's great about Star Wars is now Star Wars fans across the board, both Star Wars fans who are just fanboys and fangirls writing fan fiction, up to Star Wars fans that are going to be making the books and the novels and the animated series and everything else, we now have more to play with Tusken Raiders. There's now going to be whole stories about young Tusken Raider braves that are going out into the desert to do these things. Like, so it's exciting to see how not only is Mandalorian taking what came before it and using it to create great story, but it's also creating new nuances and characters we thought we knew, or aliens that we thought we knew, and allowing us to imagine how those characters can kind of take on their own stories moving forward, which is the best thing about Star Wars.
Yeah, and there's a massive history behind the Tusken Raiders and how they came to be. And if you do a deep dive in the Star Wars wiki, you can find all the stuff from the past of how they came to be and why they are the way they are, what it is that sparked this whole creation of them and the way they do the things that they do. What did you guys feel about them going back to Tatooine? Do you feel like we're, like, was it going to the well a bit too much, you know, going back to the old story, or do you think it serviced this story well and it didn't bother you that much?
I think as long as there's a purpose behind it, like the episode in season one where they went to Tatooine, that one I was like, you know, we've been to this planet before. Like, what new stuff are we going to discover? But you really can't get the great episode that we got this season without laying a little bit of the groundwork that they laid in the first season.
And additionally, it makes sense now. Like, in season one, I had the exact same thought you guys did. I was like, well, why are we... Like, we could have done this planet. We could have done this story anywhere. Why go to Tatooine? It is now clear that the reason that we went to Tatooine was 1,000% for the last 20 seconds of that episode. Like, they wanted to tease a somebody who has now been revealed. And this time going to Tatooine, like, you gotta go to Tatooine. Like, in the world of Star Wars, if you're a Mandalorian and you're looking for other Mandalorians and people are like, I've seen that armor before. That there is the most well-known piece of Mandalorian armor, and that's where it is. So this one made a lot more sense. And it also, in retrospect, went, okay, I get why you went there the first time. I'll give it to you.
Right. What it's something to think about, too, is, well, what if he has Boba Fett's armor now. Is why did he take the armor? Is he going to return it to the man? Is he going to return it to what you guys think is Boba Fett? Is that what's going to happen here? And what is that going to wield in terms of a relationship or a connection? I wonder.
Well, I think he just took it. I mean, I think he might. That might end up happening. I think he just took it because he feels, as part of his creed as a Mandalorian, that armor either has to be on a Mandalorian, or it has to be melted to become Beskar for someone else's thing. Like that's part of what, like, that Beskar is. And actually, you know, and they do a good job of setting this up at the beginning. Like, Gore Koresh, John Leguizamo, makes it very clear at the beginning that, you know, as bad as things were for the Mandalorians, now they're literally being hunted down and picked off one by one for their Beskar armor, which is becoming more and more and more valuable. So they kind of set up the idea that this Beskar. So, you know, it does make sense that he would want to take that armor and hold on to it to either return to somebody, give to another Mandalorian, or melt down.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to happen when, again, potentially, Boba Fett, who probably wants his armor back, but also probably still hates Jedi, shows up, how that relationship is going to work out, I do not know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I definitely didn't think I don't think he took it to return it to its owner, because I think by his thought process, if you got the armor off a Mandalorian, that Mandalorian is dead. but you are not a Mandalorian. Right, you're not supposed to have this.
It's don't you think that armor smells bad?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the Marshal cleaned it, right?
Here's the thing. I don't know what a Sarlacc pit smells like, but I am willing to put good Republic credits on the fact that it does not smell good.
And you know, most Western Marshals weren't known for their hygiene.
That's true. But at least the Banthas are clean. I mean, the Tusken Raiders are cleaning the teeth of the Banthas. I like that. Oh, that was a good little moment for me personally. Did you guys go ahead. Sorry, Mike.
No. Go ahead.
I was asking you guys, do you think those were fire knocks that killed Leguizamo? Live action fire knocks? Do you think those were that?
Maybe. I was like, either that or they were rabid loth cats. I don't know what they were.
rabid loth cats. I like that.
Speaking of that, one thing that I do love, and Star Wars fans, us three included, are horrible about this, and it always makes me laugh, is when that trailer came out, we saw that shot of that city, and we were like, oh, you know, graffiti. Look at this. It's not Tatooine, but it must be Lothal. It's Lothal. And then you get there, and you're like, I don't know where the fuck it is, but we're not going to find out. And I do love the constant, like, everything has to relate to something, and sometimes it's just a cool planet. Sometimes it's just a new place, which I do think is really funny. I still think we're going to Ilum, but we shall see. I'm still, out of all the bets, I still think we're going to Ilum.
I like Oliphant taking off his hat consistently taking off his helmet as a kind of, I don't know, as a kind of subtle FU to the Mandalorian without knowing. Like, I think it's a play with the fans. Like, you know, him constantly taking off his helmet. It was such a big deal in season one. I think they made a point of it to kind of have him take it off all the time to kind of like mess with the fans who were so all about this idea that he wouldn't take off his helmet the whole season with the Mandalorian.
Well, and also you paid for the expensive face of Timothy Oliphant. you probably want to see it.
And that hair. My God, his hair looked fantastic. I was so mad. How do you make a hair look that good on an outpost like that?
There are certain people that won the genetic lottery in life. And Timothy Oliphant, he's a tall, lean, muscular, good-looking guy with hair, with that great hair.
I had a whole thought process that really kind of made myself laugh. I was watching this, and he like took off the helmet. And obviously, I was like, that's a good looking man. But then I was like, God, that's great hair. And then I thought, how do you keep hair that great out in the desert?
Exactly.
Then I thought, well, you've been to Burning Man and you've been out in the desert for 10 days and you've seen some people that somehow managed to have some very nice hair. So it was a wash. It was a wash for me on the hair, but it definitely was lovely.
Yeah, I would say the more natural oils you have in it, you reach that point where, like, sort of the apex of how good your hair is going to look is when it isn't washed.
Yeah.
Okay. The one critique, and it's not even a critique because I'm super happy with the episode, but along the whole serialization of it all, because we do know a bit more of what his drive is, which is find more Mandalorians, I did wish we had gotten at least a little tit. And this is maybe not even a critique so much as like, I'm just so excited for next week. I wish we had gotten a tidbit of him getting a bit of direction. I mean, like, in a classic, more serialized sense, you would follow John Leguizamo, what he said, Gore Koresh said, and you'd go to Tatooine, you'd find Korvanth, you'd get Boba's armor, and something would say, oh, well, you should go to Kamino, or you should go here, or you should go to this planet we haven't heard of before. And as he takes off, we at least know that next week he's following a trail. Because as it is now, and I think this is intentional, I think this is what they want to do, so it's fine. I'm super happy with them doing it, and they can keep doing whatever they want because it makes me happy. But I kind of like want to know, well, where is he going to end up next week? And, you know, maybe he's just going to be flying around, and to Shannon's point, the New Republic is going to catch up with him and be like, oh, well, you know, let's chase this guy down. So I'm, you know, I think it's more that I'm just excited. I'm also a little bit, I will say, excited and also nervous because I know everyone is so excited about Bo-Katan, Sabine, possibly, obviously Ahsoka. And I've already been talking with friends who are texting and they're saying, you know, well, I think that Ahsoka is going to help Mando get the Darksaber from Moff Gideon. And I really think that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau are going to use these characters from the animated series very sparingly. I think we're going to see Ahsoka for one, maybe two episodes. I think it's going to be, I don't think she's diving in and becoming the hero of the show. It's Mando's show and it's Baby Yoda's show. And a part of me is happy that they're going to do that. And a part of me like feels like I'm going to be left disappointed because I love those characters so much. So I'm really curious to see how these other characters are woven into the story and how fans are going to react to it. I think it's going to be a mixed bag.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to be having conversations about and to be looking at both at it in both ways. I personally think it's I like that if they use them sparingly, I'm happy for that, actually, because we get a taste. They're officially live action. We know where they can go with it. And then maybe they spin off and do their own thing or whatever. But at least we got them to have a fun adventure live action. And we got to see that. I don't want them to be extensive, huge parts of the show. They've already built their own mythology and own stories. So I don't want them necessarily to be central parts of the show for a few episodes or have multiple episode arcs. I like it. We saw Cobb Vanth here, right? Maybe we don't see him again for another five or six episodes, and that's fine. So maybe Ahsoka comes in for one episode or maybe two or one, and then we don't see her again till the finale or something.
And they did such a good job. I think this is where I have the trust. Because I think when we all watch first season, most people have the same reaction. We're like, each of these episodes is really good. Wish it could be a little longer.
Right.
This episode today was by far the longest Mando episode we've gotten.
Yeah,
but there was kind of a, each one is interesting, but where does it all fit? And then chapter 7 and 8 came along and brought all the characters together and just paid off every single character thing. Mm-hmm. Like every single one of them, you were like, oh my God, this worked. Everything makes sense. I see why all these things happened, except for the prison break episode. And I'm curious to see if any of those characters come back around.
I think Bill Burr did say he was coming back.
So I think it'll be interesting to see how that wraps back around. But so same with this, when we get Cobb Vanth in this episode, wherever we get Ahsoka, wherever we get Bo-Katan, if they kind of follow that same formula of we see them featured in an episode and it's super cool, and then we go away from that and Mando and Baby Yoda continue on their journey. I know he's supposed to be called the child, but I just can't not call him Baby Yoda. And then we get to the last two or so chapters of the season and everything comes together. I mean, it worked so well in season one. I'd be super happy for that in season two.
Yeah.
And have you guys, and this is a slight tangent, but have you guys watched The Haunting of Bly Manor yet?
No.
Okay.
I've watched the first four.
So the actor who plays the chef, Owen, Rahul Kohli, he tweeted something a little while ago where he said, I don't know if he was doing research or something, but he was watching Rebels and there is a picture of Ezra Bridger on there. And so everyone went crazy for a second. It's like, oh my God, is this him saying he's playing Ezra Bridger?
Oh yeah.
And you know, as we know, by the end of Rebels, right, Sabine was off looking for Ezra. So
with
Ahsoka, right?
Yeah. Ahsoka. Yeah.
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 So
yeah. That's possible. And I think that could be it. They're crossing paths as they're still looking for Ezra, or maybe Ezra gets involved in some way. And couldn't it be interesting if this is Boba Fett, and like you said, Mikey hates Jedi, here comes Ezra Bridger. This could be a mind-blowing geekgasm all over the place if all of these characters are involved in some sort of battle with each other.
Do you know what's really funny? And it'll be interesting to see how this all nets out in the next decade or so, but I do find it really funny is that Star Wars is kind of doing this thing that there's the Jedi and then there's the low-key Jedi.
Right.
Like in the bigger story of Star Wars as we know it, Anakin Skywalker killed all the Jedi. There was no Jedi for a while. Luke came back. Obi-Wan Kenobi found him. Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda were hiding. As far as we knew, they were the only two Jedi left. Luke was the last hope. He was the return of the Jedi. He went off and retired. Rey was born. She goes and finds him. Her and Kylo Ren have a crazy love affair. Everybody gets mad about everything else. Rey is now a Skywalker, and that's this whole big top-line Jedi story. But meanwhile, we all know Ahsoka's been alive this whole time. She's not technically a Jedi because she walked away from the Order, but she's more cool and more powerful than any of them are. And then we have Ezra, who kind of disappeared so that he sort of skipped over all this stuff, so he was out of the action for the trilogy, but he's still out there. And it's like we have these Jedi that the Star Wars fans are clearly more interested in than they are in Rey or anything else that's going on. So it'll be interesting to see if these stories of Ahsoka, of Ezra Bridger, end up sort of becoming the thing that drives Star Wars forward into its next generation more so than anything in episode 7, 8, and 9. I kind of feel like that's where we're headed, but it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. I've said for a couple of years now that I'd like to see the Grey Jedi come into this, or the great paladins come into this. Certainly Ahsoka could be considered a great Jedi. Kanan Jarrus could be considered a great Jedi. Ezra Bridger can be considered a great Jedi. Even Qui-Gon Jinn could be considered a great Jedi when he goes against the council to train Anakin. So this is idea of pushing back against the Jedi council, against the Jedi intelligentsia, to separate themselves and understand that you can't just adhere to everything they say. You do have to sometimes go into the gray areas between the Jedi and the Sith. And so to me, I like to see these Jedi. And I think that's why they appeal to a lot of people nowadays, Mike, because and Shannon, because like nowadays we want our characters to have these layers of these shades of gray within them, not entirely all the way good, not entirely all the way bad, just something that's interesting. Tony Soprano, Breaking Bad, all these leads that have been in these roles, they are kind of gray characters, and it's your decision whether you like them or don't like them. In the Jedi, they do lean more good, of course, obviously more overtly good, but at times they've done questionable things to achieve certain goals. So I like that we're opening that door up a little bit more.
Disagree on Tony Soprano. I think he's a bad guy.
I don't quite agree on that exactly, but I do agree. I agree that the people that are not strictly speaking part of the Jedi Order are more interesting than the Jedi Order. I also think that Star Wars I will say that it's clear that Dave Filoni, in the arc of Clone Wars and the way that he wrote Clone Wars and what he did with Ahsoka, it's clear that Filoni also believes that the Jedi Order was flawed and that the better way to be was, I think it's less that the Jedi are pure good and the Sith are pure evil and all these great Jedi live in between like the Tony Sopranos. I think it's more that the Jedi Order was actually not inherently good. It was kind of inherently flawed. And Ahsoka and some of these other characters who walked away from that, walked away from it because they were actually more true to what a Jedi Knight should be than what the Order had become. But that's what makes them so interesting, to your point, is that they do live in this great area and there's lots more room for interpretation.
Yeah, which is fun. One more thing to throw in this mix is what you guys were talking about. I want to bring this up real quick about Boba Fett. I want to see if I can find it here because according to the Legends universe, you were asking Michael, like, what's he's been up to? Where does he go? What's he up to now afterwards? And according to the Legends universe, he does retire as a bounty hunter and becomes a journeyman protector, which is one of a group of respected Outer Rim sheriffs, following in the footsteps of his adopted grandfather, Jaster Mereel. So maybe that could be something Boba does. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, Star Wars does a really... they do a really interesting thing now, which I think is good. I know that, I remember, I think I was going to Disneyland the day that the news broke that Lucasfilm came out and said that all of the old novels and comics and all that stuff was moving to Legends category because none of it was canon anymore, because they wanted to sort of clear a path for this new direction, and everybody was upset. But they've done a nice job of taking some of the things, whether it be the Old Republic, whether it be Grand Admiral Thrawn. And so Boba Fett still being alive is definitely something they're pulling from Legends, where, there were all the stories and there was a whole mythology. But it does feel a little bit like the idea of him becoming a protector, the idea of him becoming a journeyman, the idea of him being like, a lot of that was like, some of it was given to Cobb Vanth, some of it was clearly given to Mando in Mandalorian. And so I think it kind of clears the path for them to say, okay, well, we will take the piece of Legends that says Boba survived the Sarlacc pit because we all like this character, but now we're going to do something very different and interesting. So I think that'll be, especially because in the interim of all of the Boba stories that kind of took place in the comics and some of the other novels, and now we have a lot more backstory on Boba through Clone Wars animated series. So his sort of like burning hatred of the Jedi, a lot of that stuff that wasn't necessarily a part of his character then has been definitely added now. And so I think that they'll take little bits and pieces from the Legend stuff and then kind of do their own thing with it.
Yeah, that's certainly been the pattern they've been following so far. So why not continue that with Boba? So I just bring this up because, like, you know, if we talk about Western stuff in the Old West, and you read the stories of the Old West, a lot of these people who started out as you know, outside the law or outlaws, whatever you want to say, become sheriffs or become lawmen in the history of depending on the town. So it would be fascinating if that's the way they go with Boba, from bounty hunter to lawman, and connecting with Cobb Vanth in that way. Who knows? Could be interesting to explore. One last thing I want to bring up. You guys are score whores. Ludvig Göransson's score in this. Did you like the sound cues? I mean, we had this very ominous stuff at the beginning, and then as soon as he, you know, leaves homie to die strung up on a lamppost, the score all of a sudden completely changes. It's more adventurous. Da-da-da! All this kind of, did you enjoy the score? Did you feel some of these cuts were a little too extreme? What did you guys think about it overall?
I feel like you're leading the witness here a little bit, buddy.
I'm asking the question.
You guys know a lot about score. Didn't you think that this was all over the place?
I didn't say that. I just did some of the sound cues.
That moment in particular did not stand out to me, but what I was going to bring up earlier in our conversation just sort of progressed past it was as Mando was rolling into the town, how they added that guitar into the theme. And I'm like, oh, this feels very old West right now, especially with the music. So I actually thought they did a good job.
If you watch the behind the scenes stuff on Mandalorian, the episode with Ludwig Göransson kind of doing his sound effects and the way he kind of like creates the sound, or if you listen to anything of any of his interviews about Black Panther and stuff, I mean, like, dude just sort of sits in a room with some like weird instruments and like goes to town. And so I love it because I think that the reason that he gets a lot of work, the reason people really love what he's doing is because he is sort of unexpected. You can have somebody come in and be like, I want sort of a Western riff with some sci-fi this, but he's finding these instruments. He's finding this way into it that like, it kind of makes it come alive. And I really enjoy it. Nothing stood out to me in a bad way. I was just like enjoying that Ludwig Göransson score. Like he's kind of like the newest composer around where he's very distinctive.
Yeah.
Like he's out of, I'm trying to think in recent memory. I mean, you know, you have obviously your John Williams and your Alan Silvestris, and then you have your Hans Zimmers, and you have like, you know, but like he's definitely one who, he's being sought out because he's giving you a very specific thing. And I dig it so far.
Alexander Desplat's another one of those that does that as well. So you have those combos. Certainly there seems to be a new crop of composers that have taken the lessons from the legendary composers and really kind of gone even deeper into that. And you're seeing that. So, I mean, I don't pretend to be a score whore in any way, shape or form, but certain scores do jump out and step out and you just can't help but appreciate them. Certainly the Joker score, another fantastic score as well.
Yeah.
When you listen to it, it puts you completely in the mind and the vibe of that movie.
I can't listen to it.
Yeah, because it makes you angry when you listen to it. It's so good.
You get anxious. Don't listen to it while driving
or at work. I was at work. I remember listening. I was getting angry as I was typing because I was like, it's the wrong idea. Turn it off. But I will say one last thing about Ludwig Göransson. Lily and I are on a community rewatch for me, her first time through. And when his name came up on the score, I was like, are you kidding me? I totally forgotten. And it's adding just such an extra element to enjoy his music in the multiple episodes. And those episodes go in different directions and tackle different genres and different. So Ludwig certainly learning how to create music for these genres on Community must have been a great testing ground for him to discover what we see later on in the last few years with his scores in these movies and other TV shows as well. So
where are you guys in your rewatch right
now? Well, we just finished episode 6 of season 2.
Oh, you're in the sweet spot. You're in the sweet spot.
Yeah, we've been burning through. And she loved the paintball episode. We loved the Halloween episode, the zombie Halloween episode, which is genius. And we just finished the Pierce discovering the trampoline with Jeff and
Troy.
Yeah, which is and a great ending with the whole him being a white supremacist thing. That just was genius. So good. Yeah, it carries a whole nother level of things now. But anyway, we're talking about the Mandalorian. So very clearly to you all who are watching or listening to us, all three of us absolutely love this. Great way to come back for season 2, written and directed by John Favreau, who of course is a series creator along with Dave Filoni. So exciting stuff to start off this thing, and looking forward to episode 2, where we're going. And I love that we've got these kernels of stuff now laid the groundwork for season 2, and we'll see what fruit they yield as we go along.
Also, just not for nothing, and this was another thought that I had, like,
yep.
Mandalorian's going to take us right into WandaVision coming out, and WandaVision's hopefully going to take us right into Falcon and Winter Soldier. And I feel like we are, like, I think we said this on the main show, but it just made me really excited that we're stepping into this era now after a dry spell for a while, where I think we're going to have some really fun geeky stuff to talk about on Disney Plus pretty much every week for the foreseeable future.
And it's all streaming. Just putting it out there. All right. Well, thanks everybody for watching this review of episode 1 of season 2 of The Mandalorian, chapter 9, The Marshal. Let us know what you thought down there in that comment section below and hit that like button as well. Shannon, what do we got to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vocal, it's @MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Mikey?
We definitely want to keep this conversation going, just like we do each week on our main Geek Buddy show. And like Johnny said, definitely hit the like button, subscribe to his page, leave us comments below. What are your theories? Where do you think Mando is going next? Is Boba Fett aging correctly, or is John wrong? Let's find out.
Let us know
what you think.
Let us know where you fall on the Boba Fett thing.
And in addition, if you are listening to us on Anchor or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, definitely rank us there, rate us there, leave us some comments there as well. It helps us go up and in the rankings and get more followers. And retweet this video, post it on your Facebook page, send it to your friends, say, hey, these guys are completely ridiculous, but they're talking about Mando. Check it out. And then we get more buddies joining the geek conversation.
Absolutely. There you go. And we'll be back every week with one of these reviews of The Mandalorian as we go along. And as there we go, as Michael said, maybe jumping into WandaVision as well as we keep it going all the way through. So look for more content here from the Geek Buddies on our podcast feed or on here on the YouTube channel, the Outlaw Nation YouTube channel. All right. Take care, everybody. Thanks for watching. And we'll talk to you next time with another episode from the
Geek
Buddies.
Hey!